This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Futuro.
Hey, what's up, family? Latino USA is coming to Los Angeles. We're having a live show on Sunday, June 26th at the theater at the Ace Hotel. And we want you to take center stage. So here's what we're asking our dear listeners who are Angelenos. What do you love about your city? What's your favorite spot? What makes LA such a special place for Latinos and Latinas and Latinx? Call us at 646-571-1224 with your message, and we might play your call on stage at our live show. Also, why don't you join us in person? The show is part of KPCC's Public Radio Palooza. You can buy your tickets at kpcc.org/palooza. We can't wait to hear your love notes to Los Angeles, mis queridos y queridas. Y nos vemos pronto, LA. No te vayas. From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, President Joe Biden promised to make immigration policy a top priority in his administration. So, how's he doing? President Joe Biden made many campaign promises on immigration and came into office with an ambitious agenda to repair the harmful border policies set forth by former President Donald Trump. Immigration has always played a key role in elections. So as we move closer to the 2022 midterms, we're taking a look into where the Biden administration stands on immigration and how or if this is going to mobilize voters. We're going to continue our 2022 election cycle coverage here at Latino USA. And I'm joined by my In the Thick political podcast co-host, Julio Ricardo Varela. We're joined by guest Camilo Montoya Galvez, who's the immigration reporter at CBS News. So, hello, everyone, and welcome to Latino USA.
Hey, Maria.
Hi, Maria and Julio. Thanks for having me.
So you've kind of been living the immigration story, you know, your whole life, and now you're an immigration reporter at CBS News. So congratulations on being able to report on this issue with this kind of perspective, which is your life perspective, because we're going to be diving deep into immigration policy right now, and specifically where it stands in terms of immigration reform. Basically, you know, what is up with the state of immigration and policy right now in the United States? So since President Joe Biden came into office, we've been keeping track of where his administration stands on fulfilling their campaign promises on immigration. He did have an ambitious agenda and frankly ran on a campaign to overhaul inhumane border policies set forth by former President Donald Trump. He said he would consider including halting all deportations.
Right.
Now, he has made some achievements. I've just been at the border wall between Arizona and Mexico. We have seen that the construction there has stopped. He did start a task force that has reunited over 100 children with their parents so far. And really, that's a drop in the bucket when you're talking about a couple of thousand. These were children who were forcibly separated under the Trump administration. The deportations have continued, though.
Yeah.
And there are also these Trump-era laws that continue well into the Biden administration. For example, Title 42, and also the Migrant Protection Protocols, or MPP, which is also known as the Remain in Mexico policy. It's a policy that basically forces refugees and migrants to remain in Mexico, not be able to come into the United States and begin their process here. And this is a policy that Biden himself has called dangerous and inhumane.
This is the first president in the history of the United States of America that anybody seeking asylum has to do it in another country. You come to the United States and you make your case that I seek asylum based on the following premise, why I deserve it under American law. They're sitting in squalor on the other side of the river.
Now, it's also important to note that some of Biden's proposals and actions, for example, ending MPP, the Remain in Mexico policy, and ending Title 42, have indeed been blocked or reversed by federal courts. So Title 42 was supposed to be lifted on May 23rd, but a Trump-appointed federal judge in Louisiana, Robert Summerhays, he just blocked the Biden administration from ending the Trump-era public health order. So again, immigration was a key policy issue that Biden used to distance himself from Trump during the campaign trail.
Right.
So we're over a year in, Camilo, right?
You know, as somebody who's been reporting on this so deeply during the entirety of the Biden administration, they say, don't listen to what I say, see what I do. So according to what Biden has done, what is the takeaway of his policies?
Sure. So under the Trump administration, we saw numerous restrictions on legal immigration, on refugee resettlement, on green card applications. We saw hardline policies at the U.S.-Mexico border to deter migrants and asylum seekers from coming here, including the so-called Remain in Mexico policy that you mentioned, Maria. President Biden, during the campaign, promised to reverse many of these policies, calling them inhumane and draconian, and promising a more humane, orderly, and safe immigration system. So far, I think the administration's record on immigration has been mixed. We've seen the administration reverse many of the Trump-era limits on legal immigration. It has expanded refugee resettlement. It resettled tens of thousands of Afghans. It is now resettling thousands of Ukrainians. It has expanded eligibility for green cards, and it is slowly trying to rebuild the legal immigration system so that more workers and immigrants can come here. At the U.S.-Mexico border, it's where things get a little bit more complicated. The Biden administration did reverse some policies, like the Remain in Mexico policy, during his first week in office. But notably, it has kept the most sweeping border restriction that the Trump administration ever enacted, which is called Title 42. Title 42 is supposed to be a public health authority authorized by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to stop the spread of a contagious disease. The Trump administration invoked this law in March of 2020 over the objections of CDC public health experts who did not believe that there was a sound public health justification for invoking this World War II era law, and has used it to expel hundreds of thousands of migrants and asylum seekers without processing their claims. And this has led to a partial suspension of the U.S. asylum system, because under U.S. and international refugee law, the government is required to screen everyone who asks for protection to ensure that we're not sending people to places where they could be persecuted. But the Biden administration, just like the Trump administration, has argued that it can suspend that legal obligation during a global pandemic because of this Title 42 authority.
I want to interject there because, you know, you bring up, Camilo, that this was a World War II policy. So again, people, think about what was happening during World War II. We see what happened to the Jewish people trying to exit Europe because of the Nazis, and bringing something like that back at this time. And as you say, Camilo, it's important to underline, this is basically in violation of international human rights and of its own policies in the United States.
Yeah, that's correct. And international refugee law and U.S. asylum law were actually created following the Holocaust. It was a way to make sure that governments in the future would not repeat what was done during World War II, in which the U.S. rejected some Jewish asylum seekers who were later murdered by the Nazis in Germany. So it was a way to prevent that from happening again. But again, both the Trump and Biden administration have used Title 42 to partially suspend that legal obligation. And what we often forget, because we often hear that there is a more chaotic border, a more open border under President Biden, is that the Biden administration has used Title 42 not just longer than the Trump administration, but more often. The Trump administration carried out about 400,000 Title 42 expulsions of migrants in about 9 months. In over a year, the Biden administration has used Title 42 to carry out 1.3 million expulsions of migrants, so more than doubled the number that the Trump administration carried out.
Mm-hmm. So, Camilo, we want to shift a bit to something that I think is often overlooked in this conversation about deportations and expulsions, which is that migrants are detained before they're deported. So let's get into the conditions migrants face when they're in U.S. custody. We know there's a long history of mistreatment and abuse of migrants and refugees who are held in detention facilities. They're often in overcrowded and just simply unlivable conditions. What have you seen in your reporting? And how is this impacting the most vulnerable individuals, like, for example, unaccompanied children?
In terms of unaccompanied children, they are housed long-term by the Department of Health and Human Services, and they operate a network of shelters that are licensed by states to care for children. Last spring, the Biden administration faced this record number of unaccompanied children entering U.S. border custody, and it was sort of caught off guard. Because of that, it had to set up this network of emergency housing facilities at makeshift shelters, including at military installations. And the conditions at these sites were not the same as the conditions in traditional HHS shelters. They did not have the same standards of care and services. And for example, in Fort Bliss, which was the largest of these emergency sites, we reported that there was a lot of issues with the mental health of children there. From what we understood, the source of these children's trauma and frustration was the fact that they were essentially languishing in this military base for weeks and even months without getting any updates on their cases. Since we launched that investigation and since we reported those findings, HHS did take some remedial steps to improve conditions at Fort Bliss, and it has also closed most of these emergency housing facilities. So I think the conditions vary. We know that government reports and outside experts have strongly condemned conditions at many ICE facilities, including because of lack of access to recreational activities, inadequate services, the excessive use of solitary confinement. We've seen several deaths in ICE custody over the past years, including because of the coronavirus. And advocates on the more progressive side believe that ICE should be moving to discontinuing immigration detention because they believe that immigrants can show up to the court hearings or also be deported without having to be detained first.
Right. And one of the things that I want to add, because this whole notion of ending deportations, right, gets complicated. And I'm citing the Washington Post in March of 2022, that during the 2021 fiscal year that ended September 30th, ICE recorded 59,011 deportations, down from 185,884 in 2020. Mm-hmm. As the Washington Post cited, the lower numbers were partly the result of enforcement changes triggered by the coronavirus pandemic that have allowed U.S. agents to rapidly expel unlawful border crossers under the Title 42 Public Health Code, which is a procedure that does not count as a formal deportation. So Correct. Can you just share more about that? Because that's, I think, important point here, no, Camilo?
Yeah.
And also, it's important for people to realize that because it's not a formal deportation under Title 42, it means if you are a migrant or refugee, that you will try again. And again, it's not so easy when you have a formal deportation to do that.
Right.
But with Title 42, which is just an expulsion, I mean, it's horrible. But that also complicates things in terms of the data.
Those are two excellent questions. The tally that Julio mentioned, the number of ICE deportations under the Biden administration, which have plummeted compared to previous years, do not include Title 42 expulsions, because those expulsions, as Julio mentioned, are carried out under a public health law, not under the typical immigration procedures that were passed by Congress. So it does not include those over a million expulsions that have happened under the Biden administration. And to be fair to the administration, it has made dramatic changes to immigration enforcement in the interior of the country, not at the border, but in the interior, because mm-hmm. it has narrowed the groups of undocumented immigrants who are subject to arrest and deportation. Under the Trump administration, really everyone was fair game for arrest and deportation if they were here without legal permission. But the Biden administration has directed ICE agents to focus on people with serious criminal convictions, those that the government deems are a threat to national security, and migrants who recently crossed the U.S.-Mexico border. So they are more restrictive categories than the broad deportation priorities that the Trump administration had in place.
Yeah.
And to tackle Maria's excellent point, for example, in March, U.S. border officials recorded over 200,000 migrant apprehensions. We haven't seen those levels of apprehension since 2000. But those encounters are inflated by a very high rate of repeat crossings.
Right.
So encounters do not equal individual migrants. In fact, in March, Customs and Border Protection actually recorded about 160,000 unique migrants, not over 200,000. And that is because, as Maria mentioned, there are no further penalties after being expelled. Many of these migrants, especially single adults from Mexico who are looking for work in the U.S., are trying multiple times to cross the border, and they're being counted multiple times on these tallies. So yes, the numbers are very high, but they're also inflated by a very high rate of repeat border crossings under the Title 42 policy. So while we've seen concerns from Republicans and some moderate Democrats that the lifting of Title 42 will further increase migration to the U.S.-Mexico border, we actually could see numbers drop eventually, because that rate of repeat crossings will likely go down because the government will actually start deporting people to their home countries instead of Mexico, and they may start prosecuting people who cross mm-hmm. the border multiple times, because under U.S. law, if you cross the border more than once, you can be prosecuted for a felony.
Except it did not used to be this way.
Correct.
And in fact, the entire immigration policy fiasco of the past decades have led into a situation where it's the same condition of the laws and confusion mm-hmm. that are adding to the problem. In other words, because of a lot of confusion, you essentially have a lot of policy that is creating more problems than need to exist.
Right.
Which leads to this interesting follow-up.
Mm.
Because how do the Democrats writ large, President Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, daughter of immigrants, how do they go back to the voters in the midterms in 2024 and say, look, trust us on this, when they themselves, you know, they've kind of put their foot in their mouths in terms of the policy enactments that they've done? So is there any way that they can campaign on this issue, or is it a lost issue?
I focus on policy, but I can obviously discuss politics. And I think the interesting question for Democrats is, what can they showcase as achievements on the immigration policy front for their base, for progressives and for Latinos who voted for them? And in terms of any sort of legalization program, there hasn't been any, right? Democrats, to their credit, did attempt to pass bills to legalize Dreamers, temporary protective status holders, and farm workers, but those bills have no chance of passing right now because of the 60-vote threshold caused by the filibuster in the Senate. They also tried to use the budget reconciliation method to try to legalize undocumented immigrants, or at least give them work permits, but the Senate parliamentarian rejected three attempts to do so. And they currently do not have the votes to legalize any subset of the undocumented population here. But I do understand that Democratic senators met with President Biden, including Senator Bob Menendez, and asked the president that in light of this congressional inaction, the administration should more aggressively utilize executive action to try to extend some form of legal status via parole or work permit, something in the lines of DACA, to some groups who are here without legal permission, including essential workers, temporary protective status holders, and farm workers. Because again, while Democrats believe that most undocumented immigrants should have a pathway to U.S. citizenship,
yeah,
they do believe that they have a better chance of legalizing the quote-unquote more sympathetic groups like the Dreamers, the farm workers, and now the essential workers of the pandemic.
Coming up on Latino USA, what challenges is the Biden administration facing with immigration policy, and what does this mean for the future of our country? Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo. Modern management made simple. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. We're going to get back now to the conversation about the Biden administration and immigration policy. I'm joined by my In the Thick co-host, Julio Ricardo Varela, and we're speaking with Camilo Montoya Galvez of CBS News.
If history teaches us anything of who made an executive order in 2012 during a re-election campaign against Mitt Romney, President Obama.
That's right.
Announced DACA as an executive order under intense pressure from immigrant youth. And if you fast forward, you know, President Biden was part of the Obama administration. So it's a play that I would be very surprised that it didn't happen. I think it's a question about timing, but I think you're absolutely right, Camilo. Since the Biden administration came into office, there has sort of been this, let's be sympathetic to the more palatable, for lack of a better word, immigrants. Given the coronavirus pandemic with the low-wage workers that have contributed to American society and the economy, the Dreamers seem to be like, oh, that's a given, and then the farm workers. So this expectation of an Obama-type executive order a la DACA is very likely what we will see this summer. And it gets to this point as well of Democrats have tried to move towards a more reimaginative immigration system. You know, there is talk about the quote-unquote root causes of migration that the Biden-Harris administration led with in 2021.
When I was vice president, the president asked me to focus on providing help needed to address the root causes of migration and to help keep people in their own countries instead of being forced to leave. The plan was working, but the last administration decided it was not worth it. I'm restoring the program and asked Vice President Harris to lead our diplomatic effort to take care of this. I have absolute confidence to get the job.
And I do think it opens up a bigger conversation about the notion of migration when many people often leave their home countries because of political and economic crises, wars, food insecurity, to find a safer home for themselves and their families. But these root issues are not easily resolved, especially when the United States itself has played a role in causing some of these crises in the first place. And many migrants can't afford to wait in these conditions. So these are decades-long issues. So, Camilo, given your reporting and the policy, is there too much of an ambitious agenda here in terms of reshaping the American immigration system? What would it take from any presidential administration to actually see an overhaul of the immigration system? Is it a pathway to citizenship, or does it go beyond that?
I think at this point, because of the way the Senate works and because of the filibuster, Democrats would need to make significant concessions, especially along the U.S.-Mexico border, for Republicans to even entertain the idea of legalizing anyone who is here without papers. And those proposals could be rules that severely restrict asylum access at the U.S.-Mexico border, that continue policies like Title 42.
Correct.
And I think that illustrates how much the framework of immigration policy has shifted in recent years. We're focusing now on making some dramatic changes to U.S. border and asylum policy, as opposed to the comprehensive reform proposals that we've seen over the past years and that have failed multiple times under Republican and Democratic administrations. Because, yes, the Obama administration tried to legalize immigrants, but so did the George W. Bush administration in 2007, right?
Correct.
And those efforts failed. So I think if we want some durable changes, I do think Democrats will need to make concessions. But again, I don't know whether their base and progressives will be happy with those concessions. Right. Because again, concessions, you know, the definition of a concession is something that you don't want to give away, but you have to forge a compromise. So I think that remains to be seen. The thing about the U.S.-Mexico border right now is that Republican critics of the administration attribute the very high numbers of migrants coming to the border solely to Biden administration policies. But the truth of the matter is that we are experiencing a global displacement crisis. And this is illustrated by the fact that we're seeing a seismic demographic shift at the U.S.-Mexico border, because when we often hear of migrants at the border, we think of the Central American countries of Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and we also think of Mexico. But in March, for example, 40% of the migrants processed that month were from countries beyond Mexico and Central America. We're seeing record numbers of Colombians, Cubans, Haitians, Venezuelans, Nicaraguans, Brazilians, and other nationalities come to the U.S.-Mexico border because the pandemic has devastated their economies, because there is political repression in some of these countries like Cuba and Nicaragua, because there are natural disasters and gang violence in Haiti.
Yeah.
And so there are just issues that are going to be very hard for any type of administration to solve. And I think we're going to continue to see these large numbers as climate change continues to displace communities across the world, especially in poor areas in Central America and other parts of the Western Hemisphere.
Right, Camilo. What you're saying is, guess what, people? This is a huge global issue. I'm not labeling it as a problem. And climate change is a central part of this, right? So you're talking about one of the largest global geopolitical issues that is facing the entire world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, by the way, none of this conversation about what's happening in terms of immigration is a surprise to President Biden. He has been around doing politics since before you and all of us were doing journalism, right? There is nothing that Joe Biden doesn't know about immigrants, immigration, refugee policy. He has lived through it. So I'm going to go to another extreme. Mm-hmm. I think that the president actually and the vice president have an extraordinary historical opportunity. And you, Camilo, brought up the historical moment of why Title 42 was brought into existence. It was World War II. It was the death of millions of Jewish people. And this country then said, we never want that to happen again. So Joe Biden could actually be the president that changes the entire narrative. He could be the president who is hugging the children, child refugees from Ukraine and the child refugees from Haiti. and say we're going to create something that is more in line with U.S. narrative, of which it says it is a country of immigrants that loves immigrants and refugees. And that, I think, could actually be the secret sauce to inspire a wave of enthusiasm from new voters, Latino and Latina voters, and Black voters on the issue of how do we deal with immigration, refugees, and human beings.
That was a big take. But I think one of the things that you've covered, Camilo, when you talk about immigration policy and what Maria is saying is immigration enforcement, how it really is sort of become, you know, a system that has spanned several administrations. There's an infrastructure. How deep do you think this enforcement strategy has become sort of the central part of this debate?
Yeah, well, I think publicly, President Biden's appointees have said that the deterrent-only model of U.S. border policy has not worked, and they've pointed to the fact that after the Trump administration separated thousands of migrant children from their parents, we saw a huge increase in the number of migrant families from Central America coming to the border. And I think you cannot get more draconian than separating someone's child. And that didn't deter migration. But what you've seen on the ground is that they've continued to rely on the traditional enforcement mechanisms in the U.S. immigration system, those being arrests and deportations and the Title 42 expulsions, to continue to manage migration flows. And I think that is partly due to their concerns that if they allow too many people to come, there's going to be a political fallout, not just from Republicans, but from independents who overwhelmingly voted for President Biden in 2020. And throughout my reporting, I've been talking to President Biden's appointees who work on immigration policy. And I can tell you, Maria and Julio, that there are some very stark disagreements between them. You have some on one side who would want President Biden to take the approach that Maria outlined, to be aggressive in welcoming migrants from all nationalities, emphasizing the U.S. role as a safe haven for oppressed communities across the world, to expand refugee processing, to expand access to asylum. But there's another camp that fears that more immigration and expanding access to the asylum system at the U.S.-Mexico border is going to incentivize migration, create what they call pull factors, and undermine other parts of their agenda and anger independence. And I think so far what we've seen is the more deterrence-focused camp win out in these debates. Because when we saw thousands of Haitians gather in Del Rio last September, most were quickly expelled to Haiti in one of the largest air deportation campaigns in U.S. history. Many of these Haitians had not been in Haiti for years because they were living in Chile or Brazil. Many of the children who were deported to Haiti had been born in South America. And we also should tackle the question that Maria, I think, raised, which is we did see President Biden go to Poland and interact with Ukrainian refugees and hug Ukrainian children. And some advocates have expressed concern that he hasn't done the same for other groups.
Yeah.
And when we look at the enforcement of Title 42, for example, Title 42 has been mainly used on Central American, Mexican, and Haitian migrants. But when we started seeing an unprecedented number of Ukrainians flying to Mexico, to Tijuana, to seek entry along the U.S.-Mexico border, they were processed very quickly in an orderly fashion. They were granted parole, which allows them to live and work here legally. And in just 2 months, the U.S. processed 20,000 Ukrainians at the U.S.-Mexico border. And so some Biden appointees would argue that that effort shows that if there is political will to increase immigration and to increase access to the asylum system and to be a more welcoming country to asylum seekers, it can't be done. But obviously, they believe there's unequal treatment based on different nationalities and groups and races too, obviously, right?
So I have a kind of nerdy question for you, Camilo, because I've reported actually on a family just like the one you've described, a Haitian family, La Familia Felix. And they were deported back to Haiti, even though they've been living in Brazil for the last decade. And their children were not born in Haiti, you're right.
Yeah.
And the United States, the Border Patrol agents lied to the family saying that they were going to be taken to Miami when they were then taken to Port-au-Prince. But does the United States bear any kind of accountability, legal accountability, for this kind of policy disaster, right? Where the United States is now actually creating a state of statelessness for the people that it's deporting. I mean, this is really kind of out there, but I'm wondering, on an international scale, have you wondered about this? Have you reported about this at all?
That is an interesting legal question. I don't think it's something that the government is currently trying to investigate, because we have another separate investigation, right, Maria, with the horse patrol in Del Rio and whether they mistreated Haitian migrants. And while the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, promised that that would be a swift investigation in September, it's been several months and we've yet to see any findings. And to be honest, I think it's going to be unlikely to yield any significant disciplinary actions, I believe, because a lot of these Border Patrol agents have very strong legal protections in the agreements that they have with unions and so forth. But we don't know yet. And that's something that the Haitian community here in the U.S. has been calling for some time, for more accountability for what happened in Del Rio and for the mistreatment that they believe the Haitians in Del Rio were subjected to.
And it's an interesting political moment, right, Camilo, because we all saw that. And so the fact that there has to be, you know, an investigation to see whether there was any mistreatment, it's like there was mistreatment. And yet at the same time, it's just kind of like, well, we're going to ponder about this.
You know, we've touched upon this being an ongoing issue, right? Mm-hmm. I think the challenges that the current administration is facing, they're not unique to this administration. And we've seen sort of a swing in the extremity of immigration policy. Obviously, in the last 30 years, the argument can be made that the Trump administration took it as far as it could, but there was still a foundation before there, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, this enforcement heavy strategy that came out of the mid 90s and then got solidified post 9/11 has become immigration policy, right? And this promise of immigration reform happening, and you kind of laid out the realities for Democrats. It's like, if you don't have 60 votes and if you're not making concessions, you're not going to get anything.
Yep.
So the short-term consequences for lack of immigration reform today for the Democratic Party, are they real? And given the narrative of how we have viewed migrants, and I would argue that there's been a lack of humanity in anything that we see in the last 30, 40 years in general, how much of a price are we paying as a country that has become more multi-ethnic? So those are my two final questions for you, Camilo.
Okay. Not the easiest question, but I'll tackle it.
Well, you know, journalists to journalists, we've got to challenge each other.
Of course, of course. No, you know? I like the challenge. To answer the first point, I can give you an example. Right now, there's a federal judge in Texas who is reviewing whether DACA, the program that provides work permits and temporary legal status to undocumented immigrants who are brought to the U.S. as children, is legal. At any moment, he could rule that it is not legal, that the Obama administration did not have the authority to create this program, and he could dismantle it. Where does that leave the Dreamer population, right? Some Republicans at least do support the Dreamer population, but I think because of the situation at the border, they're going to ask for concessions. And again, it comes down to the question of what are Democrats willing to accept? In terms of your broader question about the future of the country, I think immigration, as we know throughout history, has been an engine for growth here in the U.S. But every wave of immigration to this country has triggered a backlash. And one way or another, that backlash has subsided after broader segments of the public have realized that there is something beneficial about newcomers coming here, helping to contribute not just to the economy, but to the cultural foundation of the country. The Trump administration really challenged that bipartisan consensus, right? The Biden administration, partly I think because of the coronavirus, has not been able yet to assert a complete repudiation of what the Trump administration argued. We have a key question that I think will be answered in the next few years, which is how the Biden administration will be able to balance those two seemingly competing interests right now, managing the border and fending off Republican attacks there, while also having the ability to showcase achievements on legalizing immigrants, on expanding legal immigration. And I think that remains to be seen.
Thanks to the both of you for being on Latino USA with me.
Thanks for having me, Maria. I appreciate it.
Maria, always a pleasure to be on Latino USA with you. You know that.
This episode was produced by Lisa Salinas and edited by Julio Ricardo Varela. It was mixed by Julia Caruso and Gabriela Baez. The Latino USA team includes Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Marta Martinez, Daisy Contreras, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Victoria Estrada, Patricia Zulbarán, Alejandra Salazar, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Special thanks to the rest of the In the Thick team as well, Noor Saudi, Harsha Nahata, and Sarah Hershander. And remember, subscribe to In the Thick. Our director of engineering is Stephanie LeBeau. Our associate engineer is JJ Carubin. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. And remember, no te vayas. Ciao.
Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
Getting ready to record.
Okay. Okay. Do you want some eggs?
There we go. Ooh, eggs. Interesting. Okay, here we go.